The Recipes for Life podcast is a conversation about my favorite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. If you would like to become a qualified health coach, then the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, or IIN for short, can help you achieve your goals. I completed their health coaching course many years ago, which has been one of the catalysts for my own journey into what I now love to do, which is to help people achieve greater health through the sharing of information through my books, seminars, podcasts, TV shows and films. I recommend IIN for anyone wishing to pursue a career in the health coaching and wellness space. IIN is a one-year course, so that if you're a full-time worker, busy parent, or wherever you are in your life, it is flexible enough so you'll be able to complete all the required curriculum. Please see the link included in the podcast show notes or my website to access the free sample class and first module of their program. This will give you a great taste of the format as well as the structure, and you can also utilize my special discount that I can offer you if you decide to sign up. Make sure you tell the admissions team that you're part of the Pete Evans Tuition Savings to claim your very substantial discount. Please visit integrativenutrition.com or email admissions@integrativenutrition.com. Avery Hopkins has been a dedicated researcher and practitioner of alchemy for well over a decade. Hopkins' work has culminated in Chimera Arts, a purveyor of fine alchemical elixirs, metallic oils, and animal essences with the potential for astounding health benefits in body, mind, and soul. Alchemy is alive and real in the modern world, and Avery has brought back his discoveries to share with the world at large through his brand, Chimera Arts. The site is a wonderful library of alchemical wisdom featuring volumes of free material on the alchemical arts written by Hopkins himself. To learn more about Avery Hopkins and his work, please visit chimeraarts.com. That's K-Y-M-I-A-A-R-T-S.com. Avery, thank you so much for being a part of our podcast today. And this is really, really special because alchemy is something I know very little about, and possibly our listeners have heard of the concept before, but never really understood exactly what it means. And going back through my history, one of the most important books of my life was actually The Alchemist by the renowned South American author Paulo Coelho. So to actually speak to a real-life alchemist is going to be really exciting. So thank you for being a part of our podcast today, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pete. I'm really excited to get to talk to you about this and kind of clear the air on what alchemy is and how it works.
So what is alchemy, and what brought you to this line of work or line of service?
Yeah, everybody has this idea of what alchemy is. And if you go through any of the literature, modern or ancient, you have all these different definitions, and most people would equate alchemy to being the art of transmutation, because we always think turning lead into gold or producing a philosopher's stone. Mm-hmm. And I'm not here to say that that isn't possible, but that isn't exactly what alchemy is. So I like to break it down easy for people. I like to demystify, and you can kind of drill this one into your head because this is how you define alchemy. Alchemy is the understanding of how consciousness relates to matter. So It isn't exactly turning lead into gold, although you can find that in your laboratory experiments. It's understanding how consciousness relates to matter. And my language is really important when I describe these things. I choose my words very carefully. And you'll notice I use the word understanding. So I like to let people know that understanding is different than knowing. Knowing is purely intellectual and of the mind, and it has its limits, but understanding is experiential. So when you're looking at the definition of alchemy, the understanding of how consciousness relates to matter, it means you're having an experience of how consciousness relates to matter. It's not just a philosophical idea that you throw around. it's something you're actively experiencing all day, every day, once you totally step into the practice.
I guess you have correlations, or there's correlations there between the world of psychedelics as well, or transcending ego and having non-dual experiences, that it can only be experienced for somebody to actually understand what that experience feels like. You could talk all day long about your own personal journey or what somebody may encounter, but until somebody goes through that process themselves, you're really sort of, I won't say you have no idea, but the reality or the ultimate truth is very different than what you possibly have perceived. So is that the same type of experiential experience that you're talking about with alchemy?
Yeah, it's funny you bring in psychedelics. It's actually a really good analogy, because imagine somebody comes up to you and they ask you, oh, what is it like to do ayahuasca or to do acid? And sure, you can tell them your experience and do your best to recount everything that you've gathered from that. But that person is never going to be able to take away what actually happened, what it feels like, and what it is to transition through that whole experience. So you do have to go through it yourself to really understand. And sure, it's good to like come to these things with knowledge and get a little background information about what it is you're stepping into before you dive in. And that's kind of what I do for people, is I provide them with clear, demystified information of what is you can most likely expect when you do go in, because it can be really foggy. You know, consciousness is an infinite thing with infinite potential, and it's easy to get lost in that with your mind. So if you have a guide, which is what the alchemical philosophy teaches, it gives you a roadmap to infinity, essentially, so that you can actively navigate your internal and external experiences simultaneously. And it's really interesting, because when you go back and you read all the old literature, these ancient alchemical manuscripts, and there's thousands of them, they're the oldest books we have on the planet, you're going to find that everybody's always pointing towards this illumination of self, or the perfection or potentiation of who you really are, or what matter really is. And they're always pointing you in this direction of seeing the truth, seeing and then experiencing the truth. And when I say truth, I mean it in a non-relative way. We're talking like universal truth here. There is no difference between my truth and your truth. Truth is always singular, and it's always the same for everyone and everything. And that's something that alchemy is leading you towards if you take that path or that journey. And I can talk about it for days, and I'm supposing we're going to get into it. But most people have this interest in spirituality now, like this path to enlightenment or awakening or, you know, the shift or whatever you want to call it. But if you were to look at those things and actually get down to the essence of what is going on and how it progresses, you are going to run headfirst into the alchemical philosophy and art. It's impossible to get away from it. It's impossible to have an experience without it. And this is something most people don't know, because we've been told that alchemy is something different than it is. We automatically assume, based upon what we've read or heard, that it just means transformation. And sure, you'll find transformation within the art and the practice, but as I described earlier, that's not necessarily what it is. It's an understanding, it's an experience of how consciousness, your consciousness, relates to your physical experience. And there's a very detailed and kind of systematic way in which that happens, a way in which can be navigated and then utilized using your consciousness to push and pull on the experience, so that you are actively experiencing transformation, and it's not by accident. You know, it's not a coincidence. It's consciously directed. So yeah. Sorry, I'll leave you off on that one. It's a long thought.
No. I want to talk about this roadmap to affinity.
Yeah.
So how much of this is based around intention? So you're a human being. You have never heard of anything like this. You know that you desire or you yearn for more knowledge, more truth, more understanding, more awareness of yourself and how this wondrous thing called life works and what our purpose is, if that is the right definition for this. So talk us through, I want to know how you got to do this work and then follow through that as far as a practical sense for people to take the first steps, if you don't mind, please, Avery.
Sure. I often say that, well, there's two purposes to life. The first one is to wake up. And when I say wake up, it means to fully experience truth. If you're experiencing truth, it means you're actively experiencing self, which also means you're experiencing self in everything. Your reality can be equated to a dream or what's the other word people have been using? Like it's a program, it's a simulation. And so it's not real. Like, yes, you're really having your experience, but it isn't what it appears to be, which is what allows us to call it an illusion. Illusions just mean that things aren't what they appear to be. And so, you know, in like the ancient Vedic traditions, they have the goddess Maya, and she's the goddess of illusions. She's this one that's creating this magical scenario and experience that we call life. But we get it confused. We think that it is really out there, but it's not. Everything out there is actually in here, inside of me. And when I say me, I'm speaking of big me here, the consciousness that is I, the I am factor, not my body, not my mind, not my memories, my thoughts, my dreams, none of that. Those are just merely what I am aware of. So the first purpose to life would be to wake up to that truth, to experience and understand it. After that, it's whatever you want. It's an open playing field. You get to dream as you would prefer. Any experience is yours and you create it, whether you want to admit it or not. It's happening all day, every day. But when you recognize the truth, when you wake up, as I'm saying, that becomes the experience. You can no longer refute it. You can no longer use logic to speak your way out of what is actually happening. So it's really simple for people. Wake up to who you are, know thyself, and then dream forward from there using the tools of navigation that alchemy provides. And that's essentially how my path worked. Like the way I came to these things was synchronistic, and it would be for anybody. Anybody that finds alchemy, what alchemy actually is, and really actually learns it and applies it, it's going to be a very synchronistic, intuitive process where everything seems like it's leading you to this moment, this climax, and you hit your aha moment. And that's what happened to me. You know, like I started off just like any other human on this planet, being born, being taught things. We are impressed with all of these cultural norms and expectations, and you know, it limits us to a degree. It tells us who we are and how we function. So my story, like how I came to alchemy and made my way through it eventually, is that I actually started off as a devout Christian. I was taught Christianity. I was taken to church. I went multiple times a week. I was that kid walking around in his high school with a Bible, going to Christian clubs and camps and really, really believing this story. But when I went to college, my faith began to be questioned. I was made fun of for what I believed, and that made me feel embarrassed. You know, I didn't want to have people put me down for who I was. So I decided to start researching my own religion. I wanted to understand Christianity and the Bible inside and out so that if anybody ever came to me and tried to start an argument, I could stop it immediately with what I perceived as truth, Christian truth. So I set up to read the Bible cover to cover. And it took me about a year, and I did it. And as I read through it, I realized it wasn't exactly what I thought it was or what I was taught it was. And it made me question my own religion. but I wasn't ready to give it up yet. So I went deeper. I started reading books on the subject, the history of Christianity, you know, interpretations. I read translations of other Bibles. I looked into the Greek, the Latin, the Hebrew. And the more I looked, the more this illusion crumbled, like this belief system, it crumbled. And so eventually I lost my religion. I couldn't adhere to it as a truth anymore. It was clearly a belief system and one that had been created, perverted, and altered a lot throughout time. So I still had the perspective that truth was in one of the religions. So if it wasn't mine, then which one would it be? And I started studying anthropology and religion. And I've read pretty much every sacred text you could possibly get your hands on, and all the different versions and interpretations of them. And the more I read, the more I found that they all kind of say the same thing, and they all kind of have similar origin stories. And they're all half true. Like, sure, there's some awesome moral things in there, but it isn't the truth. And this is when I started to recognize that I had a longing to discover truth. I wanted to know what the truth was. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it would look like. I didn't know where I would find it. But I had this deep intuition that it was there. And I mean, I'm not surprised, because most of humanity does have this feeling, and everybody looks for it in spirituality or science or any sort of experience, and very few find it. But I set out as a seeker to understand truth. My first mistake was thinking that I could do it intellectually. Remember, I defined knowing and understanding as being different.
Yep.
I thought in the beginning that I could know what the truth was, and that was my first mistake. And I didn't learn that until later on. So I set out to learn. I started studying basically everything you could ever imagine. I was picking up books left and right. I was reading 1 to 2 books a day. And so every week I was going through a huge stack of information, anything from history, spirituality, art, poetry, language, you name it, like anything I could get my hands on to give me some sort of perspective on what was happening here. And I stayed in that cycle for about 7 years, reading all day, every day. And I learned pretty much everything about anything you could ever imagine, but I never pinned down the truth. And in those moments, I started to get really depressed, because I lost my friends, all of my social circle, my purpose. I didn't know what the point was anymore. There didn't seem to be a point. Nobody seemed to know anything. And I didn't know what to do, so I just kept doing what I was doing, which was reading. But one day, I went to a bookstore, and I picked out a bunch of books about science and history and different subjects that I thought maybe would give me more insight. And once I had a pretty big stack, I started walking to the checkout to buy my books. And I took a shortcut through this bookstore to get there faster. And I walked through a section that I almost never went to, which was the witchcraft section. I had pretty much determined in my mind early on that that was not the answer for me. So I always avoided like witchcraft and magic literature. So anyways, I walked through this aisle and a book catches my eye. There was one face out that just said alchemy in big bold letters. And I thought to myself, I was like, you know, I know pretty much anything about everything, but I know nothing about alchemy. So I stopped. I picked up the book. I read the back. It seemed interesting enough. So I turned to the inside and I looked at the table of contents to see what it was all about. And it seemed to be a pretty good introduction. You know, it had the history and philosophy and practices of these ancient alchemists. So I was like, what the heck? Why not check it out? See if I can, you know, gain something that I don't know. So I put all my other books down and I bought that one book and I went home and I started reading it, and it blew my mind, because for the last 7 years, I had been seeking, searching for truth and searching for it with knowledge and intellect and studying hard to understand with hopes that I would understand. And when I began to read this book on alchemy, it was like anything that I had ever learned, thought, felt, experienced, dreamed of, anything ever all of a sudden seemed to be woven together and pinned down at one focal point that was called alchemy. I still had no idea what alchemy was, but I could now see that there was truth in it. There was like this light that just went off. And once I had that experience, I was addicted. I had to know what alchemy was all about, or I was going to die trying, you know? So I dedicated all, literally all of my time to reading alchemical texts. And it started with the modern interpretations of what alchemists in the past were saying. But then I decided, like, this doesn't make sense because they're interpreting. It's not what's actually being said. So I went back and I started reading the traditional manuscripts, everything from all the way up to the beginning of recorded history. And it took me years and years and years to pack in all this information. But here's the crazy thing about alchemical texts is that they don't make sense to the logical mind. They're written in code and in metaphor and with all these myths and analogies. And it's really difficult to understand what they're talking about. And everybody's been trying to interpret it for thousands of years. So it didn't make sense. But I just kept reading. I figured if I just keep going, maybe I'll see a pattern. Maybe it will begin to make sense to me and I can piece it together. And honestly, it did. And it took a really long time, but I did see a pattern. And I took very careful notes and I dissected these old manuscripts like nobody's business. I went to universities, private book collectors, you name it, to find any scrap of information I could on alchemy, and slowly began to see the pattern. As I pieced the pattern together, I created what I called the alchemical code. So if you know the code, you know how to crack the code. You can read any alchemical text and you can immediately understand what they're saying on every single level of reality you could ever imagine to have. Because these philosophies and truths, they apply to everything, internally and externally. You cannot get away from them. And it's been a mind-blowing journey. But to see that code clearly and then to turn around and apply it and watch it work has been the most profound experience ever. And this is where the understanding has come from, how my consciousness actually relates to matter. And how I can navigate that and with intent, like you said.
So where do I go from here? Where do we go from here? Because that was just, what a remarkable story. And I want to pick up a few of the things that you said in your quest, if that's the right word, or your curiosity. And I want to talk about that from an individual standpoint or from a human standpoint. Is curiosity one of the keys to our own evolution and understanding, do you believe? Are we one of the only species on the planet that is curious at this level of consciousness?
I would say that yes, in the beginning, curiosity plays a very important role, but that fades very, very quickly. Because I'm going to be totally honest with you. I have met very, very few people that actually want to know the truth, that actually want to wake up, because it's a lot easier to stay here asleep in the dream than it is to take responsibility for your experience. So yeah, curiosity does open the door, but it takes serious courage and virtue to step through and go forward. It is not fun. It is not easy. And it is not for the light of heart. I had to literally sacrifice everything that I have had and was to gain this understanding. And it was extremely painful and scary, terrifying, actually. So it's a great place to start, but that's usually where people stop, because I don't meet a lot of people that retain that virtue to really meet what is required to see the self.
Also trapped in there or locked in there is our identity.
Now, it can be.
You talk about your childhood being raised as a Christian and then defending that and then doing your study or your research to get to your truth or to understand the truth behind the religion or religions out there, and that there must be some sort of truth. But I want to talk about identity because it's a common thread that I have on my podcast as well. So for you, Avery, is your identity How did that feel when you started? I mean, were you defending your identity through religion? Was part of your identity as growing up and being a young man? And I want to talk about the identity, because obviously you've opened the door here to really talk about self and our place in these worlds, or this world as the ultimate truth. So please talk to me about identity, because I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah. So where we are now, let's just look at the mass populace.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll say that, you know, 99.99% of all the people on the planet are confused about who they are. They actually think that they are their identity. They are this person, this name, you know, these numbers on a paper, this ID card, this body. That's what people think. And thinking is usually part of the problem. Identifying with identity is what leads to ego. And ego is the number one distressor on the planet. No other problems come except through ego. So identity is a terrible thing and a beautiful thing. And it gets really confusing at first from this position. Because if we're trying to know truth, we're going to identify and create beliefs. And it's important to remember that no belief is true. Every belief is an opinion, and an opinion is a preference for thinking. So we prefer how we want to perceive ourselves and others and our world at large. And this is what creates ego identification. So this was the hardest part. And that's why I say that, yeah, curiosity opens the door, but then it takes some serious virtue and fortitude to go forward, because you do have to shed identity. You are not who you think you are. You are not doing what you think you're doing. You are not where you think you are. You're not even a human, you know? You're not any of these things that you believe yourself to be. And that's a really, really hard fact to have learned and to experience. It's terrifying, because it seems and feels like the dissolution of self, which could be equated to death. So to actually experience yourself, true life, yeah, you do have to go through a death experience. I don't mean it has to be necessarily physical, like bury yourself in a grave, but you, who you think you are, will die when you wake up to the truth. And like I was saying earlier, if the first mission in life is to just simply wake up to the truth, that's it. It's everybody's personal purpose is to get to that point. Once you get to that point and you have that experience and you gain that understanding, now you have the wisdom of it, then purpose becomes self-defined, which means identity becomes self-defined. You are who you choose to be. And it would appear that if you follow the stories of alchemists or any major enlightened person that we have record of, after they reach this point, it's almost like they become shapeshifters. They are anywhere and everywhere. They show up all throughout time. They have many different names, characters, and roles that they play, right? Their identity isn't solid anymore. It's defined by their choices, their awareness, their circumstances, all of these things. But ultimately, it's created in the mind. You get to choose who you are. So it becomes a very foggy thing at first for the mind, which is why I point to experience over knowledge.
So you touched on fear there as well. And fear is one of our identity's driving forces, probably more so than anything. So alchemy is about transcending fear, understanding fear, facing fear, all of the above. And how does love fit into this?
Oh man, yeah, love is right there at the top. And yeah, let's go back to fear real quick though. So I don't know if you've ever read Carlos Castaneda. I got way into his literature in the past, and I appreciated one of the lessons that Don Juan, Carlos's teacher, talked to him about. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was in the first book, The Teachings of Don Juan, where Don Juan teaches Carlos that there are four enemies to man. The first enemy is fear. And we should know this really well now. almost all problems, especially socially, come down to fears. Fears of not being seen or heard, fear of not being accepted, you know, the fear of persecution, of pain, of whatever it is, rejection. Fear really drives a lot of people, and very much so on a subconscious level. Most of the time, we don't even know we have these fears. And many of the fears we do have are taught to us. They're ingrained into us from our culture, society, parents, experiences, so on.
And they're illusions.
Yeah, they are illusions. They're beliefs, they're opinions. A fear is a choice. To be afraid of something, you're choosing that. Mm-hmm. Everything is a choice when it comes down to it. You know, some people, like when I was younger, I was afraid of dogs. I was afraid of water and swimming because I had some scary scenarios that happened to me. And I had this belief that all dogs are bad or that all swimming pools are bad and trying to hurt me. But it's a belief, right? It's a choice that I made subconsciously because I was ignorant to the truth. Now I don't have fear. I got past my first enemy. So Don Juan teaches to Carlos, the first enemy of man is fear. That one's pretty easy to see. If we overcome the fear, then the second enemy of man becomes clarity. Now we think that we actually see clearly, and this can be an enemy. There's nothing wrong with saying and observing that you have a clear sight or vision of what is, but to observe your perceptions and think that they are the truth, that is the trap. This is where people get stuck in relative truth. And let me just tell you straight up, there is no relative truth. There is only truth. There is no my truth and your truth. There is only truth. It has to be singular. It has to remain infinitely forever. If it ever changes, then it wasn't the truth, because it means that now it's false. It's an opinion. So clarity can be a trap sometimes, and that can be people's second enemy. If you can make it through the clarity, through the perceptions and the beliefs that you actually know anything or have gone anywhere, then you come to wisdom. You're gaining understanding. That's the third enemy of man, is wisdom. Once you have wisdom, it means you're having an experience. And many people can get caught up on their experience too. They can be all high and mighty. They can stand on their soapbox and they can preach that we should do this and that, and you need to fix this thing or wake up to that thing because I know the truth and you don't. That's bullshit. That's an enemy. It's a trap. So you cannot use wisdom. You cannot use truth. If you're going to actually be in accordance with truth, you have to live with integrity. And integrity isn't also what people think it is. Integrity comes from two root words. The first one is in, which means no. And the second one is tegre, which means to touch. It means don't touch. To live in integrity is to not touch your reality. Don't touch the experience. Don't have a belief that anything needs to be any other than the way it actually is right now. Nobody needs to fix themselves. Nobody needs to wake up. Nobody needs to do anything, yourself included. Just let what is be. If you can let what is be, then you can treat it unconditionally, right? You don't have a condition of it anymore. You're just allowing it to exist as it is. And that is the truth behind love. So if we want to talk about love or going from fear to love, people have a really skewed perception on what love is. We think that we get into these relationships and now we, you know, make these sacrifices to be with one another and really like nurture this thing. And I'm not saying don't do that, but actual true love does not come with conditions. True love is when you can simply let something exist as it is. You don't need to touch it. You can treat it with integrity, which means you're embodying virtue. Virtue means to be in accordance with truth. If you're expressing truth, then truth is coming through you, out of you. You can have the truth realized experience, meaning you are no longer trapped by fear, by clarity, or by wisdom. But to go back to what Don Juan teaches Carlos in these books, there are four enemies of man. And the fourth enemy is death. And Don Juan says that no man ever escapes death. And I would have to agree. Just like I was saying earlier, you cannot understand truth without having the experience of the death of the identity, who you think you are. When you get rid of that belief system, then you have the understanding of who you are, and you have died to the thought or the belief of who you were. The identity has dissolved, and what remains is the self, the experience of truth. And that is a very profound thing. So yeah, all of these things do matter. They do come into the storyline, and they can be navigated. There are systems, which is what I have found alchemy teaches. When I cracked the code and found the structure, and it could overlay it with anything, physical, mental, or emotional, it matches flawlessly every single time. I actually spent 15 years trying to disprove alchemy, because I always look for how I can poke holes in the theory first to see if it's full of bullshit, you know? I couldn't do it, man. I spent 15 years and I could not disprove this thing. I eventually had to surrender and allow it to be what it is, with love, with integrity, and start applying it. And that's where the magic happened. That's when I became an alchemist and started really living, actually living, which I don't see that happen a lot these days either. So that's a lot to chew on.
I'm going to chew a little bit more on that in a second, but I do have a question for you. You talked about your past and your history leading up to now in a very colorful and heartfelt way. So I want to talk to you about what the concept of now means to you in relation to past, future, but right at this particular point in time. Define the word now for me from an alchemist's point of view.
Well, the first thing we have to do is check our assumptions. And this should be like common practice to any truth seeker. And I should also just let anyone know that is a truth seeker to just stop seeking. Because if we're really going to pin down now, now is not later. Now is not then, right? Now is now. And people talk about the eternal now, the power of now, right? It's what we're always talking about. But it's not something that we can logically understand. You can experience it, but you do not need mind to have an experience. This is something that I can get into about how it works, like the alchemical principles that lead us to this understanding. Actually, maybe I should just do that, because that'll just make this whole question make more sense. Let's backtrack for a second. Let's do like a little lesson on alchemy. So here's the beginning of the code. Here's what I learned from all those years researching alchemical manuscripts and trying to poke holes in it. So the alchemists had their first, we'll just call it their belief, right? Let's look at it objectively. We're not saying this is true or real or whatever. Let's just look at it together. Mm-hmm. So the alchemists said that everything in life, inside and outside, above and below, everything in life came from the one same source. And they called that source the prima materia, which means the first matter. Mm-hmm. The prima materia was always something that they were seeking. They were seeking for it internally and externally. And to make any sort of experiment or transmutation work in a lab, you have to understand this prima materia, this first matter. So everything in life comes from the one same source, and that source is infinite. But this one thing, which it is infinity, we could define it as chaos, infinite potential, right? It's the source of life, precedes everything, gives life to everything. It has three qualities, and the alchemists would break these down, and they call them the three principles. So a principle is defined as a foundational truth. What it means is that if you use your reasoning capacity to its fullest degree, you will eventually reach rock bottom of the mental potential, and you will hit a principle, a foundational truth. This is how mathematical algorithms and, you know, theories are formed. Mm-hmm. So this one thing, this first matter, has three principles, three characteristics that are always there. We have to remember that because a truth never changes. There is no such thing as relative truth if we're actually talking about truth. Mm-hmm. So these things are always there. What are the three things? So alchemists define them by code. They called them the sulfur, the mercury, and the salt, but that doesn't really help us. So we have to break down the code. In the past, people began to talk about sulfur, mercury, and salt as being the soul, the spirit, and the body. So everything in life comes from this one same source, and everything in life has a soul, spirit, and body since it is a foundational truth. That means every rock, plant, animal, human, star, anything has these three truths, a soul, a spirit, and a body.
Mm-hmm.
But that also doesn't really help us either, because it's still kind of arcane, because so many people will have different perspectives on what a soul or a spirit is. So I like to start to get into it, because this is important on understanding how consciousness relates to matter. Where is this all coming from? How am I having this experience? And what is the purpose, right? So let's look at soul, spirit, and body for a second. This is the alchemical philosophy that we're getting into now.
Yep.
So I always like to start with body because that one's pretty obvious, right? We all have a body. We interact with different bodies. There is the body of the mountain and the animals and the land that I am on. There's the bodies of the people I interact with. But what is it actually? What is actually a body? So I got really curious about this one day, and I just wanted to know how it's defined. And then I went to a dictionary and I defined these words. So what is a body? A body is defined as a material structure that embodies or gives concrete reality to something abstract. That's the literal definition. And it's a little slippery if you start to look at it. It's saying that something is being structured to give a concrete reality to something that's actually an abstract. Well, what is an abstract? An abstract is defined as an idea. So ideas are being structured to give the illusion of form. That's what a body really is. And our own English language is telling us that. Okay, so the body isn't actually what it appears to be. It's structured thoughts. It's ideas. We put those together and we have this experience of self, of body, of reality. But there's something that precedes it, which is the mind. Because, of course, where do ideas come from? They come from the mind. So if we know that a body is a structured thought, and we know that thoughts come from the mind, now we can define what the spirit is. And if you go and you look up spirit, many dictionaries will define spirit as the mind, just straight up the mind. So your spirit is your thoughts. It is everything going on in your conscious thinking, not your subconscious is there too, but like your spirit is really your thoughts. But what is the mind, right? So now we have two of our principles locked down. We have our structured thoughts for our body and we have the mind for our spirit.
Mm-hmm.
What is the soul? What is the third principle? Well, if you define mind, mind is defined as an inherent faculty of consciousness. So it's an inherent power. That's what faculty means.
Mm-hmm.
It's an inherent power that consciousness has. Consciousness precedes mind. Mind precedes body. And now we have our three principles. So this is what the alchemists were talking about. And let's just look at consciousness, which is also equated to the soul, which is the sulfur of the alchemists.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is the soul? What is the consciousness? If you go and you look up soul, it will often be defined as the actuating cause. I find that super interesting that the definition for soul is the actuating cause. It's the actual cause. It's the source. So now we can see where it's all coming from. It's all coming from consciousness. And isn't it funny that we can define alchemy as being the understanding of how consciousness relates to matter? Well, we should know how it relates to matter now. There are three principles. Consciousness, which inherently has the power to think. Thinking can be structured to give the illusion of form. So what bridges the gap between consciousness and matter? It's the mind. It's the spirit. It's the thoughts. And this brings us back to our explanation of time. How does the now play into all of this? Well, first off, the actuating cause, the source, the soul, has to be infinite. And everybody talks about this in every religion and spiritual practice, that the thing that backs you, the thing that gives you an anchor to this life and this experience, your soul, is infinite. It is that little chunk of divinity within you that comes from the prima materia, the first matter. So if first matter is infinite and undifferentiated on consciousness, as soon as you differentiate consciousness, which the only way you can do that is simply by being aware. Once you are aware of what is. The thing that is you, is the universe, is everything. You're aware of it. You're aware of yourself. You now know thyself. If you know yourself, then you should know that there is only one inherent power that you have, which is the power to think. If you think, you're going to start choosing your preferences on which thoughts you like more than the others, which experiences you prefer more than others. And this is what allows you to structure those thoughts. This is what creates your experience, your illusion of a body and of a reality that is outside of you. Time does not come into play until the mind exists. And the mind only exists when you become aware of it. Otherwise, the mind will rule you. You will be asleep within your skull. And this is something else I really like to point at, because if we're looking at this alchemical philosophy, these three principles, body, soul, and spirit, and we just saw how the body is preceded by the mind, and the mind is preceded by the consciousness, then this should be really interesting to us. Like, I like to go deep into this. Mm-hmm. It means that my body, I, the one that is aware, the one that is aware of my thoughts and of my form, I am not inside of my body. My body is inside of me. I am conscious. I am aware. I am aware that I am thinking. My thinking is within my consciousness. So my spirit is within me. And if I know my spirit is within me, it means my body is within my spirit, because that is the thing that creates it and structures it. So we have it backwards as a population. We think that we are these conscious beings having a human experience, and that is just not true. We are not inside of bodies. We are not inside of the universe. It is inside of us. This is what the alchemists meant when they said, as above, so below. You can translate as above, so below to also mean as within, so without. Because the alchemists would say that the above is the heavens. The heavens are the abode of God. They are an infinite space where the creator exists. Well, what is the creator? Who and what is God? I'm just going to answer the question for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's you. It's your consciousness. Your consciousness inherently has the power to think, therefore creating a structure, a material manifestation, just by simply being aware of itself, self-reflection. So if God is in the above, I currently experience that within me, not outside of me, not up in the heavens, not as some man floating in the stars. No, it's on the inside. So the above is the inside. And what is the below? The below is the physical reality. It is earth. It is the manifestation. It is where the creation is placed. So there is God and there is creator. There is immortal and there is finite, right? So the above and the below, the inside and the outside. They would also say that it was this place, the above, the internal realm of God, that created the outside, the below, and the earth. So really, when you start to see these texts and break it down with the code, it's all there. Like, they're totally laying it out for you. No exceptions. And every single spiritual practice, religion, medicinal philosophy, anything ever, shamanism, you name it, it's all coming down to the same principle. Because you can't have an experience without having a mind, and you can't have a mind without being conscious. And if you're not conscious, you're not having the experience, and it doesn't exist. So it always has to go in this order.
So I have a question for you, because I had an experience with the Sonoran Desert Toad, which is contains 5-MeO-DMT. And after ingesting that substance, what my experience was the only way to I identify with it was everything. Self no longer was part of that equation, or even though, but self was everything. So there was light, dark, every possible, as you said, or infinite possibilities of, again, I can't even put it into words, because I wanted to ask you about light and darkness and the potential for everything, because I'm still trying to integrate that experience into my day-to-day experience as Pete, so to speak, in this world. So and my question to you, I guess, is how do you, once you've had that experience or you've experienced what you're talking about, how do you integrate that into Avery Hopkins' life, into the now?
Mm-hmm.
How does it change the way you think? How does it change the way
you think? Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. So now we have this structure to work off of. Because I just went over the alchemical philosophy with you,
yep.
It means that we no longer ever have to assume or believe anything, because we can have this experience right now. I can see that I have a body. I am aware that I am thinking and feeling,
mm-hmm.
which means I am aware that there is something behind my mind, which is my awareness. It's my consciousness, right? So anybody right now can validate for themselves that those three things actually do exist.
Yes.
So don't take my word for it, right? Just look for yourself. Okay. Because we know these as principal truths, and a truth will never change, it means now we always have an anchor to truth. We will never be fooled ever again. So anything that comes up, any experience or thought or feeling, rather than be confused by the mysteriousness of it or trying to figure out and know how to apply it and integrate it, stop yourself right there and simply go back to the truth. The truth is that I am aware, I have the power to think, and by thinking, I create my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just keep that in mind as we go forward, and let's talk about 5-MeO-DMT for a second, because who doesn't want to know more about that? So some people will go, I call it going all of the way. Some people will go all the way with 5-MeO and some people don't. Some people have this experience where they're laughing and giggling and crying and it's beautiful and they're full of their expression, right? Those people don't go all the way. They haven't broken through. They haven't had the death experience yet. The people that do break through die. And if you had a breakthrough experience, just start to relate it because you'll understand what I'm talking about. If you actually take that medicine all of the way, it kills you, right? The identity, who you think you are, and your experience of this place here in this reality. All of that stops. It goes black. You'll reach a place that I like to call the void. In the void, there is nothing. There is no thoughts, there is no feelings, there is no body, there is no light, there is no nothing. And it feels like eternity when you come out of it. You only have that feeling exiting the void because now there is something. But when in the void, there is nothing. So it's like death. It's like going to the grave. So if you actually break through on 5-MeO, you'll reach the void. And you'll be in the void for eternity because there is no time.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah. So you reach the void, time dissolves, self dissolves, thoughts, feelings dissolve. And now you're existing in the infinite potential, the undifferentiated consciousness. This is the prima materia. This is where it all starts and begins. From that place, there is only one thing that can happen because there is only one power that consciousness has. First thing that happens is you wake up. you realize that you are here. You're aware. As soon as you become aware, you immediately start thinking and you start manifesting a reality. Usually the first way it manifests is as a light. Bink! There's a little beam or circle or sphere of light. It's there to your awareness. If you focus your awareness on that light, it will create the entire universe before your eyes, and you will see the interconnectedness of all things because you are the creator. You are the divinity. It has to come from you because there is only one truth, and that truth backs everything that exists, including you, your body, your identity, and the consciousness that you are using to be aware of it all. It is all the same for all of us, every single thing. My consciousness is not different than yours or different from my dog's. It's just consciousness. It's just mind, and it's just structured thoughts. They are not individual at all. So if you do break through on that 5-MeO experience, what you're experiencing is the self. And what you should take away from that is, yeah, I'm the creator. I'm divine. Not in an egotistical or narcissistic sort of way, but just like a humbling realization of the truth of your experience, which should allow you to see that you're dreaming. As soon as you have the experience of self, you automatically begin to think. Because thinking exists, it means that past and future now exist. The only way that thinking can ever happen is if there is self-reflection. Self-reflection is just self-awareness. Here you are in a void, nothingness, blackness, no thoughts, no feelings. But upon becoming aware, you're aware of the self, you're creating an infinite feedback loop, the toroidal energy, the Ouroboros, the snake eating its own tail, however you want to symbolize and metaphorically explain this experience, that's what it is. It's you becoming aware of yourself. In sacred geometry, it's related as the Vesica Pisces, the mm-hmm. two circles that overlap to create that third little fish shape in the middle. So the mind is just self-reflection. Self-reflection gives you the illusion of two, which now means that we can have up and down, left and right, dark and light, you know, black and white. But that's the illusion. That's the thing with finding like the middle way in Buddhism, is to go in between that, realizing that, yes, to lean to this side or to that side is to just adhere to the belief of my mind, which means I lose sight of myself, which means I fall asleep and I lose my anchor to truth and to source. So I will eventually now decay and die. But if I don't lose that anchor, if I always know who I am, and I always observe my thoughts with no expectations for any of them to be good or bad, just love it as it is, then I can remain in that central space and I can go in between the darkness and the light. There's no reason to define yourself to be in any one position or the other, because that's when you start to fade and you don't want that. Or most, I would think that most people don't want that. Which is something interesting. Like, sorry, my mind's just going now, but
yeah, I get it.
With alchemy, there's these myths, right? Like, first off, everybody just says, oh yeah, alchemy is the art of transmutation. It's turning lead into gold. It's making philosopher's stones and all that. And like, yeah, sure, you can find that in alchemy. Totally. It's actually there. But like we were saying, that's not what it is. But let's just talk about those myths for a second. Everybody equates this practice to getting to that point, making this magical substance that can turn lead into gold. Mm-hmm. And it was called the Philosopher's Stone. And it had these really interesting properties, two major ones that most people focus on. The first one is being able to transmute metal into gold. The second is that it's a universal panacea that can cure all sickness and allow its consumer to live forever, to be immortal. So I find it interesting that as you follow the alchemical trail mm-hmm. and you find yourself back in the experience of self, the one single undifferentiated awareness, the void, right?
Yep.
You're finding the source of life that everything is grounded into. it permeates all things. Because like I was saying earlier, all of these objects, yourself included, the universe, the world, the animals, everything, they aren't outside of you. They're inside of you. First, they're inside of your mind. And then your mind is inside of your consciousness. And your consciousness is just there. Infinite potential, undifferentiated in every way possible. By differentiating it, you have the experience. So if you never forget, if you always are anchored to that truth, and if you are, you will live a life of virtue. It means you will never be uprooted from the source of life. So yeah, you are going to find the universal panacea. You are going to find the cure for all diseases. You are going to find the ways in which everything is created and transformed. And you are going to be who you really are, which is divine. That's what alchemy always, always leads back to. And sure, you can taste that on a hallucinogenic trip. People get those quick snippets, right? We smoke 5-MeO or take ayahuasca or near-death experiences, whatever gets you there, right? But upon getting there, if you do go all the way, you will have that every time. And it's the same answer. Like, it's not different from one to the next because we all come from that same source.
I'm listening to your words and witnessing the clouds drift over the sky at the moment. It's quite grey here in Sydney. It's very early in the morning and I'm in a beautiful, blissful state at the moment, taking in this information, but also just experiencing this moment as well. And that... we're going to have to finish up in a minute because this has been such an informative and such a truthful experience listening to your words, Avery. And I would like to bring this back or bring this forward into one of the gifts that you're offering the world at the moment, which is your work with alchemy, apart from the philosophy, which I guess comes through in the products that you're creating. But can you talk to the listeners and myself about what it is that you're creating in your laboratories these days and why this is so important?
Yeah. So many people come to me for one thing. I do many, many things. But if you go on my website and you look at my work, the first thing that will catch your attention is that I'm extracting essential oils from metals. A lot of people like to argue with me about that one, and the scientific community basically hates me. But let's go back. Let's go to those three principles. Alchemy says that everything in life comes from the same source, and that one thing expresses itself in these three ways. So everything has a soul, spirit, and body. We understand now that the soul, spirit, and body is our consciousness, our mind, and the structured thoughts that give us the illusion of form. But what is the soul, spirit, and body if you look at matter? What is it on the outside as opposed to the inside? Because consciousness, thoughts, and structured ideas are all philosophical in a sense, right? You can only really play with that internally. But alchemy has an entire laboratory practice taking this truth and putting it over matter. So what I do is I like to show people. I'm a see-for-yourself kind of guy. Like, take no man's word. So I like to show people that this is the case. And what happens if you were to take matter into a lab and extract it in the traditional alchemical ways is that you find that upon splitting this material up, you always end up with the same three substances. If you extract the body of anything, plant, animal, mineral, or metal, you extract the body, you will always get some sort of alkaline salt. So the body is equated to the salt. If you extract the spirit of any material, plant, animal, mineral, or metal, you always get what was referred to as a strong water, basically a liquor, some sort of flammable liquid, whether it be a spirit like alcohol or like acetone or some of the other acids that come from the mineral distillations. A spirit is why we call spirits spirits, right? It's why alcohol, it's called spirits, because it comes from the alchemical tradition. So the body is an alkaline salt. The spirit is always some sort of liquor. And the soul is always expressed as an oil, no matter what material you work with. So if this philosophy is true, it means it should apply to every single form of matter. And that's what I show people. And the most potent way to show somebody that this is the truth is by extracting an oil from metal, something that should be technically impossible, right? Because you can squeeze, juice, press, whatever. You can do this to a metal all day long and you're not going to get a single drop of oil.
Uh-huh.
But if you put it through the alchemical process, you actually do produce organic essences, just like an essential oil from any other material. So yeah, on my website, I offer these oils, these metallic oils that can be used for physical, mental, and emotional purposes to really anchor you back into the experience of truth. And it's what I've become most well known for, I guess. And that's what I offer on my website, amongst other things, you know, other extractions from the herbal, animal, and mineral kingdom, so that people can experience the practice, the laboratory practice of alchemy. And then I also offer people the opportunity to learn. So I come out and I teach every once in a while, and I hold private apprenticeships, and I have a couple of YouTube videos so that people can really kind of start to wrap their heads around this information and maybe even try out the practice for themselves, which is one of the reasons why I'm talking to you, I suppose, is because I'm coming up to Brisbane in the next few weeks to teach for 2 days, a 2-day course talking all about alchemy, its history, philosophies, practices, applications, you name it. It's just mind-blowing information for many people. So yeah, all of that can be found on my website, kimiaarts.com.
Brother, I just want to thank you so much for your time today. It has been a true joy to be able to listen to your wisdom and for you to share the ultimate truth of reality and being. So I love you, mate, and I look forward to connecting with you when you're in Australia. And I'll put all that information up for people so they know where to find you. And hopefully you can start training some new apprentices to change the world. Love you, mate.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Pete. I really enjoyed this opportunity.
And opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.